I can feel optimal 98% of the time, let's say. I'm not going to say 100 because we all have our down days. But if I know that the biggest choice I have that influences that is what I eat, why would I stray from eating the right things?
This is the Entrepology Podcast, the podcast where we optimize the bodies, brains, and lifestyles of entrepreneurs, go-getters, and world-changing innovators.
Welcome to the Entrepology Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Megan Walker. As an entrepologist and naturopathic doctor, I optimize the health and performance of badass women working to change the world as entrepreneurs and go-getters. You know, people kind of like you. Before we jump into the interview, I want to invite you to join our free Facebook community, Legacy. If you want to be something amazing, you need to surround yourself with amazing people. The Legacy community is made up of badass women living, not leaving, but living our legacy every single day. We are leaders, parents, entrepreneurs, and innovators collectively committed to leaving the world better than we found it. My mission is to support the health and optimization of these badass superheroes, literally to places we never thought imaginable. If you are on a mission and get it, that your health is the key to your unlimited potential, then join us. We are super awesome. You can find us on Facebook at www.facebook.com/groups/BE Legacy. See you there. Today's guest is someone I met at the gym at a conference for health entrepreneurs. Right off the bat, I knew that I was going to meet so many people at this event who just resonated with my values and ideals. And Dr. Vincent Pedre, our guest today, was one of them. We had this fortunate experience of running into each other at the gym, and then later that evening at that cocktail party, you know, where you look around, you try to eye people that you had met or encountered earlier in the day. We struck up a conversation. And Dr. Pedre was so fascinating to me because he started his career as an internist, someone who practiced internal medicine, solving all those problems no one else could figure out. And as he transitioned in his career, what he realized is he wasn't able to find an exit strategy, a solution for people. And so he discovered functional medicine. And in doing so, was able to address his own digestive issues. And he came eventually to become the author of Happy Gut and to have a functional medicine practice in New York City that focused on functional medicine as the foundation of his care. Today's conversation was fascinating because we took it from that place where we were discussing disease and the influence of the gut on chronic disease, autoimmune conditions, and then we transitioned it to a place where we were looking at performance, at that brain health axis, and the way that the health of our gut impacts our ability to think clearly and to execute profoundly every single day. This is not an interview that is relevant for just people with digestive issues. This is an interview that is relevant for anyone who's on a mission, who wants to understand where they need to start with respect to dealing with their own performance issues and taking things to the next level. It was fascinating. Here it is for you. Dr. Vincent Pedre, it is such a pleasure to have you. Welcome to the Entrepology Podcast.
Such an honor. I am so excited to be here.
Well, you know, you're going to talk with this interview about a few things that really get me excited. One is digestive health, and two, medical doctors who see it, frankly, the way I see it, where the gut is the root and the foundation to just about every other element of one's health. Can you take us through your journey as a physician, as someone practicing internal medicine, and how you landed in this space where you're using functional medicine and in particular looking at gut health as foundational pieces of your practice?
Well, this is sort of a funny story because in a way it circles all the way back to my childhood. Having grown up with standard medical care, being treated with antibiotic after antibiotic as a teenager for bronchitis, for sinusitis, eating what was the standard diet for a kid in the US at the time. So lots of wheat and lots of dairy and milkshakes and ice cream and cereal with milk. And inevitably what happened looking back is too many antibiotics decimated my gut microbiome. I developed leaky gut syndrome and became sensitive to both wheat and dairy. And my immune system was weak. But because I grew up with that, I considered that my normal, and I didn't even think that it was abnormal during medical school when we learned about irritable bowel syndrome. Then you think, well, that's what I have. I have an irritable bowel. I have a very sensitive stomach. But it was after I finished my training in the hospital. So this is after medical school. I went and trained in internal medicine because I was very cerebral and I loved thinking about complex problems and figuring out what was going on with people. But I found myself at the end of my training thinking, is this it? Like, is this what I just spent 7 years training so that I can prescribe somebody medications that never make them better? And that got me on a road to asking, what else? What else is out there that maybe has the answers? And I started first looking at books that were being written for, you know, mass consumption. And even before medical school, I had already read books by Deepak Chopra and Andrew Weil. So I had started meditating. I had started doing yoga. So I had already kind of changed my trajectory even before medical school. I was more open-minded and saw the benefits of meditation and helping me deal with the stress of medical school. But it was after that that I encountered books by Dr. Frank Lipman, where he talks about functional medicine, and Dr. Mark Hyman. And that's what really started changing things for me, because I thought there's another way. And intuitively, I knew that there was another way because I had experimented with myself, changing my diet, doing different things to see if I could be healthier and not get sick as often. And I found when I took dairy out of my diet that I stopped getting sick as often as I used to. And I thought, well, there's something, and we're not being taught this in medical school, but there's got to be something to this. And I finally landed in functional medicine. Started learning about the gut microbiome and the balance between the good bugs and the bad bugs and the yeast and the parasites. And I realized that what I thought was just the way my body behaved, my irritable bowel, which Western medicine simply gives a medication for to treat the symptoms, was something that I could actually probably resolve. So I started working on my own gut. I was already an MD trained, and by then I had my own private practice. And I knew that I needed to change the trajectory of the way I practiced medicine, because I was just dissatisfied with what I was doing. I felt like it's kind of weird, but I felt like an imposter, you know, prescribing things, but knowing that this is not the way I ultimately wanted to practice medicine. And I started with myself, figured out my gut issues, and started working with patients with their gut issues. And lo and behold, before I knew it, I had this big subset of my practice that was concentrated on gut health. And then, as you know, when you start peeling back the layers, you start realizing that the gut is related to a lot of the chronic diseases that we deal with on a daily basis. So that's what got me here to the gut and functional medicine and changing the trajectory of my practice. And it wasn't an overnight affair. It really, and I think if I were to do it differently today, I would have liked to have closed my old practice and said, I am no longer doing this, and open a new practice and saying, I am doing functional medicine. The reason that I couldn't do that is that I felt that I needed to acquire, I don't know, a certain amount of knowledge and comfort with the practice of functional medicine in order to make the transition. And so what instead became a slow transition from Western medicine to functional medicine over a number of years, as I continued to dive deeper and deeper and educate myself more and get more experience with patients. So that's how I got here.
And so how much is your practice exclusively functional medicine at this point?
I would say that the majority of my practice is, but I can't exclude that I live in two worlds, and I'm not exclusionary of Western medicine. I have patients that are coming in for just preventive screenings, physicals, but I weave in the functional medicine into every patient. So even if patients don't realize that they, what they're going to get is functional medicine. That's what they end up getting from me. And that's very different from what I did in the beginning, where I had patients that I practiced functional medicine with and patients where I practiced Western medicine. And eventually it just all melded together. And the great thing about that is that I get people who trust me as a Western doc and then are willing to travel the journey to make the transformation and take take responsibility for their own health and start realizing that their food choices and their daily lifestyle choices play a significant role in the types of chronic health issues that they're dealing with.
Well, I think that's just it. It's that trust piece. Because, you know, I have so many of my own patients who will come in and they'll say, listen, like, this sounds great, but my doctor said that food has nothing to do with my IBS or my Crohn's or colitis or any of these other elements. Can you just give us an opinion as a medical doctor? Does your food impact the health of your gut?
Oh, my goodness. 100%.
I just need it to come from you.
100% yes. And I can tell you, I've had moments of extreme upset where I was still working with certain specialists, gastroenterologists that were part of my old, my early practice, people that I referred to. And one of them told my patient that she had no issues with wheat gluten, that was completely bogus, that because she didn't have celiac disease, that she could eat all the bread she wants. And that was in between seeing, before she saw me in a follow-up visit, and she was going on vacation and she ate all the bread she wanted. And when she came to see me about 2 weeks later, she was back to square one. And super sick in her gut. And I realized then that I'm going to only be able to refer to specialists that are understanding, even if they don't have all the knowledge, but will be respectful of the work that I do. Because, I mean, it's just clear. I mean, how could it not affect the health of the gut if that is our biggest exposure to the outside world, is what you put through your mouth?
It makes sense. And like, I don't know about you, but it's so simple to take dairy out or add dairy back in and watch the impact that it has on someone's health.
And I think it's so powerful too, you know, even for this patient, you know, I feel sometimes like a doctor is almost like a parent. And when your child has been bad, so they decided not to listen to your instructions and they veered off. But you use it as a learning opportunity because there's no greater teacher than experience. And to be able to see the contrast for themselves, for a patient who has been gluten-free and then has gluten and then sees the drastic impact that that has on their health, well, now you don't have to convince anyone. And you're never going to have to convince the patient again that they really need to stay away from gluten.
And for you, because I know I'm going to have people listen, they're going to say, so what are you telling me? Are you telling me that you think I should be off all dairy and all gluten all the time? Is that something that you share with your patients, or is that reserved for certain populations? What's your take on that?
I will say dairy and gluten are the top two most problematic foods for people with an irritable bowel.
Yeah, I see that too.
Say, and even I would say with inflammatory bowel disease as well, those foods tend to be problematic. And we know now that the protein in gluten, gliadin, activates zonulin. And what that does is it loosens the tight junctions between the cells that line the intestine and thus increases the permeability of the gut. So there's a direct relationship between gluten and gut permeability. Now throw in the fact that the majority of wheat, I don't know about Canada, but I know in the US, is sprayed with glyphosate as part of its as a convenience to mature and desiccate the wheat all at the same time for harvest. Now you have glyphosate residues on the food, and glyphosate is an antimicrobial. It's going to go into your gut. It's going to destroy gut flora. It's going to cause a dysbiosis. So now you have a dysbiosis and an agent, which is gluten, which increases gut permeability. So what's going to be next? The person's going to develop food sensitivities. These are really problematic foods. And at the beginning, if someone is having a lot of issues, you really have to go extreme and you have to go 100%. You have to go gung-ho. Eventually, what I find is that once you heal the gut enough, and this could be a multi-month process, it could be a 6-month, it could be a 12-month, this could be a 2-year process, depending on where, what the foundation is with which they started. You know, if you have been sick for a decade, you're not going to heal in a month. It just doesn't happen. We're talking about a surface area that is the biggest surface area in the body. I mean, the small intestine, which is about 20 feet long, is the size of a tennis court. That is a lot of contact with the outside world. And that's also a huge area that has to heal from whatever insults have been happening over the course of many years.
And so if you have someone who's listening and they're like, okay, I'm paying attention. You're talking gluten and dairy. I get it. But the whole notion of taking all these foods out and going through all of these steps, it feels overwhelming. So what is the next right step? Because the one thing I just want to stress for people too is that you may have GI issues, gastrointestinal issues, and you may have IBS, or you may have things that have things that have been going on for a while, and you may have even been told that, you know what, lots of people have those. You can just take something over the counter and manage it, but there's a difference between common and normal. So these things aren't normal. And so now that all the people who are sitting there listening going, okay, great, get it, not normal, what's the next right step for them? Granted, everyone's different, but like, where do we go next?
Yeah, everybody's different, but this is what I find. You have the people who can, you have the all or nothing people that they have to throw themselves all in or they'll cheat and they'll fail. And then you have the people who need to be methodical and they need to conquer one thing at a time because it can be complicated. You know, even just cutting out wheat or gluten from the diet, now insert that into the practicality of everyday life. Where are you for lunch? Are you eating lunch at work? Well, what are the options where you can order food or you go out and buy food during lunch? Or are you able to bring lunch with you? And if you're ordering food, do you have options that are gluten-free? That can take a while. So if now you're knocking out gluten and dairy, it can get really overwhelming. So I have actually a great example of a patient today, a young lady with rheumatoid arthritis. We've been working on her diet. Now she's over 6 months gluten-free. Finally realized with her that she couldn't tackle everything at once. We said, well, let's tackle the gluten first. You can't go gluten-free overnight because you're going to trip up. It's a process and there are unpredictables as you go through your day-to-day life that takes you to different places and different schedules. You're going to encounter moments where maybe you find yourself with no other choice but something that has gluten because you weren't prepared. So the process is not an overnight process. And for people who get overwhelmed easier, eat really easily, I find that it's better to say, okay, let's just conquer one thing at a time. Let's get the gluten down. So with this patient with rheumatoid arthritis, which again is an autoimmune disorder, but it's connected to gut health. We started with gluten and she's conquered gluten. So the next thing we're really working on is reducing her sugar intake. And after we conquer sugar, she's going to go on to dairy. And the cool thing about this is that this is not a doctor-directed process. This is a negotiation. You know, that's what makes functional medicine so different, is that the relationship with doctor and patient is not maternalistic or paternalistic. It is basically a symbiotic relationship where we're both working together. And we empower the patient to be part of the decision process. So if they want to do gluten first, because that's the easiest thing for them to kind of put their heads around at this moment, and she's the one who chose to do sugar second and dairy third. And I support that process because ultimately I just want to get her to the place where she's cut all of them out. And I want her to do it successfully. And if trying to do all three at once could overwhelm someone, then they're going to fail. So that's what I say for people that feel like it might be too much or might be too difficult. conquer one thing at once, and you can even divide it into pieces. Like, you're just going to figure out how to not eat gluten when you're eating out. And then eventually you're going to figure out how to shop gluten-free and not have any gluten in the home. So you can break it up into more easy to handle bite-size pieces, with a pun intended.
I love it. It's your health, right? You get to own it.
Exactly.
Yeah. So you mentioned something in there that I think is really important to address. You said, I had this patient with rheumatoid arthritis, and it's an autoimmune condition, and the autoimmune conditions are connected to the gut. Can we go there? How are autoimmune conditions connected to gut health?
Oh, wow.
I have an idea, but like, let's go there.
So much evolving there, but let's start with pretty much everyone who has an autoimmune condition has been on at least one round of antibiotics, possibly has an inflammatory diet. So maybe too much sugar, too many refined carbohydrates. So with the antibiotics, dysbiosis leads to leaky gut syndrome, which eventually can cause all sorts of problems, including the worst of which is translocation of lipopolysaccharide, otherwise called endotoxin, from gram-negative bacteria into the bloodstream, which is extremely inflammatory. And then there's the idea of molecular mimicry. Oh, so the possibility that certain proteins, for example, like the gluten protein, when it combines with tissue transglutaminase, forms a polymer that the immune system recognizes and attacks, but then might confuse itself and thinking, well, I need to attack my own self. So that's one theory. Then we know that there's certain bacteria like Proteus that are related to certain autoimmune conditions, like Proteus with rheumatoid arthritis, for example. But what's common with these autoimmune disorders is that if you have a fire going on in the gut, then you've got an alarm system going off in the entire body. You're activating the entire immune system, and that's going to be both fighting self and non-self. So the attack is going to turn to self. So one of the early keys to quieting down the immune attack is figuring out where is the fire in the gut and how can we put it out? Does the person have a preponderance of unfavorable bacteria? Are there parasites? Is there candida? Is there yeast overgrowth that needs to be resolved? And then once you start doing that, rebuilding the gut lining, using nutrients that heal the gut, and a dietary intervention that also helps support that and reduces inflammation. Then there's the whole concept of lectins and the possibility that lectins in certain foods might, you know, because lectins tag molecules and they think that lectins might be responsible for the immune system becoming alerted to a self protein that otherwise it wouldn't have been attacking.
So what you're saying is there's actual science to support the connection between an autoimmune condition and gut health.
Exactly. And we're learning more and more, but I mean, the cool example is just tissue transglutaminase is present in the lamina propria, which is that space that after just inside the lining of the gut, the epithelium, the inside of the gut, is the lamina propria. And that's where immune cells sit. That's where a lot of activity is happening, surveilling what's coming through. There's tissue transglutaminase there. Well, guess where else there's tissue transglutaminase? It's around the thyroid. So it's no wonder that perhaps as you develop a leaky gut and gluten becomes a problem, and creates that polymer with tissue transglutaminase, which then activates the immune system. The immune system then starts looking for the same protein molecule in other parts. And my theory, even though I don't think it's proven, is that why so many women have thyroid disease, Hashimoto's, and most women with Hashimoto's have some issue with their gut health as well, is that as you get a leaky gut, and turn on the immune system, the immune system causes a leaky thyroid, which then spills proteins that are not supposed to be outside, like the thyroperoxidase enzyme, which is one of the most common antibodies found in Hashimoto's. Thus, there is this direct connection between the two. But again, going back to that idea that the surface area of the gut is huge. If there is a fire going on in the gut, if your immune system is activated in the gut, your immune system will be activated everywhere in your body. So if you can go in the gut and shut that off first and start healing through a healthier anti-inflammatory diet, then you can shut everything else off. Everything else.
And here's the situation where I think it's relevant to people who are, I mean, it's relevant to everyone listening, but I hear this so often in my practice, and I'm sure you hear something similar, where most often women will come in with elevated antibodies that are produced against the thyroid. And what they've been told is, we can't do anything about it until your TSH is off. So until your thyroid gets so reactive that the rest of the feedback loop hormones are starting to be skewed, we have no treatment for you. Therefore, we don't even care if there's elevated antibodies. And what you're saying is, it's all starting in the gut. And if we can come back and we can actually start to address and treat those things early, then we can prevent you from ever crossing that threshold where we're having to manage a full-blown disease.
The elevated thyroid antibodies with normal thyroid function, it's kind of a moment of, thank goodness, we just discovered disease that is in the making. But if we do things now, if we change your diet, if we work on a more thyroid favorable diet, reduce inflammation, figure out if there's any problems in your gut, perhaps we can stop this from progressing into full-blown hypothyroidism that will require medication for the rest of your life.
Yeah, I love this. This is preventative medicine, right? How do we look at those same markers that are often interpreted for disease and reinterpret them as being upstream markers that we can have some influence over?
You know what was really surprising to me was in my early days, I used to check as a routine, I would check TSH and see that it was normal. And I thought, okay, wow, that's great. TSH is normal. I don't have to worry about it. Then as I got educated in functional medicine, I started adding T4, T3, 3T4, 3T3, and looking at all the ratios and whatnot. But then eventually I just thought, you know, maybe I should check antibodies. Even if they're coming in and they have no symptoms whatsoever, it's so predominant in women, 8 times as predominant as in men, of autoimmune thyroid disease. And I started checking antibodies, and I was surprised at how many times I found antibodies with normal thyroid function. Now, what if I had just stopped at the thyroid function and said, well, it's normal, you're fine.
Right.
So again, like going back to, we can pick up disease before early on, we can pick up a process early on before it happens. And a lot of it starts seeding in the gut. It's the beginning of the disease process.
So how do you assess gut health? Because I'm sure there's some people here going, listen, like my bowel movements are normal and I'm not gassy and I have thyroid disease in my family and I've got a few other things, but I never thought about my gut because I don't interpret it as being a problem. How do you make an assessment?
This is the thing that really, really amazes me. It absolutely amazes me. And I just had my patient of mine who I met a year ago, came in with elevated Sjogren's antibodies, anti-nuclear antibodies, lots of joint aches, pains, and no one could figure out where it was coming from, but a completely normal digestive system. No digestive complaints. But me knowing that things still originate in the gut, we went and looked at stool analysis. And there's all different types that can be done. There's PCR tests, there's 16S sequencing, there's stool cultures, and they all have their strengths and weaknesses. In her case, what we found and what was really surprising is she had 2 different types of yeast in her gut, one of which was not Candida, I think it was Rhodotorula, that was very predominant. She had a dysbiosis going on. She had no lactobacillus present. And so we started working on her gut. And she had not come in with any gut-related complaints. She was complaining of joint swelling and pain and back pain and whatnot and dry eyes. And of course, we worked on the diet and put her on an anti-candida diet, a very low-sugar diet, cleaned out certain things. She was eating too many processed carbs and sugar. She has a son who's around 5 or 6 years old, so there was a lot of sugar in the house. So I had to change those things, and it took a couple of months. But about at the 6-7 month mark, she was really starting to feel much better. And we went through a couple of rounds of different herbal anti-fungal remedies. And in her last stool analysis, we found that everything had resolved. All the yeast was gone, and all her pain had disappeared. And that was really, really a remarkable and teaching tool, because she was one of the first patients, because I get so many patients that come in knowing that I am a gut expert, so they have gut symptoms. And she was one of the first that came in and had no gut complaints. But when I looked in the gut, there was a lot of stuff going on there that was not, I think she also had blastocystis.
It's just fascinating the way that, the way that the body works, but so true that the gut ends up being the foundation. And I find with my patients, a lot of times, once they get to know me, they'll come back and they'll say, you know what, I told you my gut was fine, but actually, here are the symptoms that I'm having. Because it's not something people want to talk about. So I just assume, unless I see evidence otherwise, that everyone's gut's a mess. And we investigate accordingly. And then I wait for them to prove me wrong, as opposed to the other way around.
And I think that's such a great approach, because you just don't know. And like you said, sometimes everybody's a different type of symptom reporter. And some people downplay their symptoms. Some people exaggerate their symptoms, or just are more vocal and expressive about them. And you don't know, but there is always a suspicion. If there is some sort of chronic inflammatory condition, it could very well be related to the bugs in the gut.
Totally. And, you know, I'm speaking from experience, because I remember the first time I saw a naturopathic doctor, they said to me, how's your digestive health? And I said, it's totally fine. Turns out I had celiac. So, and it wasn't because things were totally fine, but I was like, I'm sure it's just a variant of normal. I was the kid who would sneak into the refrigerator and drink the extra banana antibiotics if they were kicking around, because I liked the flavor. So, I mean, I did a number.
Oh,
like you guys, parents, you have to hide those antibiotics, because we kids thought it was delicious. So I just assume everyone is trying to pull the same thing that I pulled the first time that I sat down with somebody.
My oldest diagnosis of a celiac patient with positive antibodies and ended up having positive small intestine biopsies was a 52-year-old woman with Hashimoto's. And no one had picked it up.
And was that because she was good at hiding her symptoms, or she had a different manifestation of celiac?
She did not have a lot of gut symptoms that she complained about. She really didn't. But what was interesting is that at 52, most women going through menopause might start putting on some weight, and she was very thin. She couldn't put on weight.
So you started to piece it together.
We started to piece it together. And just when seeing that she had thyroid antibodies, I already start thinking, is there an issue with gluten, or could there be undiagnosed celiac disease?
Yeah, it's so interesting. And it's nice that you made this transition from internal medicine to functional medicine, because I feel like every single day I'm playing Dr. House. Like it's everyone's a little bit different. And it's never just one thing.
It's multiple. What's really interesting is that it comes down to just a few causes, but with multiple different outcomes.
Right.
So what one person gets as rheumatoid arthritis, another person gets as ulcerative colitis, another person develops thyroid disease, another person develops some unusual, undiagnosed neuropathy that no one knows what it is. So everybody has different channels, but it comes down to inflammation. And the biggest pocket of inflammation in the body can be the gut, aside from what happens internally biochemically from the foods that we eat, the balance of nutrients that we take in.
Let's further that even more. And we started to talk about these people who present as normal. And for that population, a lot of them aren't even thinking that they need to have this investigated, let alone trying to convince them to take out gluten and dairy. But for a lot of the people listening, we work with entrepreneurs, we work with high performers. And so there's two things that I really want to bring up and I'd love to get your perspective on. One is the concept of the gut-brain axis. And the other one, which I see in my entrepreneurial population quite a bit, is this state of sympathetic dominance, where their digestive system is caught in this place where there's just this sympathetic overload or this overtonification of the vagus nerve, and they can just never get to that rest and digest state. So I call it, you know, the walking well, to put it another way. Can we talk a little bit about what the gut-brain axis actually is? Let's talk about why the gut actually affects your ability to concentrate and to think clearly and all the things you need to do when you're a go-getter. And then let's talk about that sympathetic dominance.
There are so many connections. I mean, just starting with the fact that the microbiome, the bacteria in the gut, produce more neurotransmitters than are produced in our brain. I mean, just think that they outnumber our body 10 to 1. The cells in our body. There's 100 trillion of them approximately in our gut. And we know that, for example, lactobacillus in the small intestine can produce GABA. And if you're missing that lactobacillus, you might be a more anxious person because you're not getting the GABA that your body needs. But all sorts of neurotransmitters. I mean, this is going to be the next frontier in us understanding the gut is not sequencing the microbiome. It's going to be looking at the metabolome, which is the cumulative metabolites that are produced by the bacteria in the gut. And that is so key because then it affects brain health. And there's this bidirectional communication in the nervous system between the gut and the brain. I mean, they say that the gut is the second brain. And just think about even the way we talk about the language we use, like your gut feelings, your intuition, it's something that you feel viscerally. You feel it in your gut, like your gut is thinking. And that's usually the one that's right, not your brain that tends to overthink things and try to be logical and rationalize. And then you mentioned the connection with the vagus nerve, which innervates pretty much the majority of the digestive tract, of the smooth muscle in the digestive tract. And if the vagus becomes dysfunctional, which probably the majority of the people walking around in sympathetic overdrive have dysfunctional vagus firing, what happens is you're not going to produce enough digestive enzymes to digest your food properly. You're not going to produce enough stomach acid to be able to break down the proteins that you eat so that you can extract the amino acids from them that are used as the building blocks and precursors to neurotransmitters. And it's also going to affect the motility of the gut, which can lead to things like small intestinal bacterial overgrowth and small intestinal fungal overgrowth. And once you get, you know, add some sugar in there and you get yeast overgrowth and you're not clearing the yeast produces a whole host of toxins that it can affect your brain and causes that mental fog. And so I'm sure you've had so many patients with candida or yeast overgrowth that come in, they're just in this fog. And once you start clearing up the candida, their sugar cravings start disappearing and that mental fog lifts.
Yeah.
So it's such a key, you know, we see these strong and powerful connections between the gut and the brain. The other thing you mentioned is sympathetic overdrive. I mean, I think that is our current society is just completely overrun. Like we have lost the balance with between our sympathetic and parasympathetic. That balance scale is tipped all the way to sympathetic. And as great as modern technology is, the smartphones and the laptops and the tablets, they don't help that parasympathetic balance. They actually push people more into that sympathetic overdrive, whether it's looking at the blue light coming from the screen, or it's because you're still working at midnight. There's no moment to disconnect and respect the biology of the body, which is so important. And I was talking to a patient about that today, about the, she drives herself really, really hard, and it's constantly the same thing over and over. It's the hypothalamic pituitary axis, overstressed, not sleeping well. And I'm constantly talking to her about the importance of balance. Like, what are you going to accomplish? At the cost of what? At the cost of your own body, of your health? I mean, a brain that is exposed to high levels of cortisol cannot form memory. You know, it affects your ability to think and remember. But the other thing is that if you're in sympathetic overtones, you've got a lot of these norepinephrine, epinephrine circulating. They found that that increases the permeability of the gut. So now you have another reason that isn't antibiotics, that isn't dysbiosis, that increases the permeability of your gut, causes a leaky gut syndrome. Now add in all the other insults, and no wonder people are struggling with so many chronic issues. I mean, honestly, I think if we could slow down and bring some mindfulness to our lives and think about the foods that we eat, where they come from, clean out the diet. I mean, that to me is more than 80% of health. If you can do those two things. And I was listening to Dr. Bloom, who is a specialist in immune pathology and autoimmune disorders. And one of the pillars in her program is conquering stress. And she puts it there because it is such a strong modulator of the immune system. You actually need to treat that as one component of a healing regimen. You know, it is just as important as thinking about what you're going to eat, is thinking about how am I going to reduce my stress, or how am I going to reduce the way that my body takes in stress? You know, and that's been, I go back to the beginning of my story. One of the early things I learned before medical school was how to meditate. And back then I was using guided imagery. And the funny thing is I wanted to learn to meditate because I was so afraid of needles that I would go into a whole vasovagal sympathetic response, and my heart would race. I would break out into a cold sweat and I would pass out. And I decided, this is not normal. I want to figure out what's causing this, and I want to take control over it. And that's when I started learning about the autonomic nervous system and the parasympathetic, which is the one that, you know, like you said, rest and digest, that's parasympathetics, and the sympathetic. And I learned that meditation and breath work are probably the most powerful way to get control of this system that appears to not be in our control, but it actually is. It's just, it's kind of like, you got to learn how to control it in a way that's not like moving an arm. You know, it takes a little more work to learn how to be a calm person in the midst of environments that might not be calm, like a doctor training in the ER, you know. But not everyone is a doctor, but, you know, people walk into offices that are crazy. And there's a lot of energy that people deal with. And I honestly think, I mean, I see so many people with pathology that I think a big factor is stress and how they manage stress. And I can tell you how to eat till till the sun goes down, and we can fix everything. And if we do not fix your stress, we're not going to complete the cycle. And I can say this for any gut patient that I have seen. I learned, I would say after couple of years. Early on, I was really being more concrete and working on things that are visible, like what you eat and supplements and things like that. But I started realizing that if I don't call out the stress and get people to change the way that they behave in the face of stress, and that is through meditation, through breathing exercises, to nurture the strength of that parasympathetic nervous system, if you don't do that, you can't completely heal someone.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And, you know, one of the things I loved about, you know, you open your website and there's this video talking about your program, and you guys are eating the happy gut meal where you have people around a table, and you talked about the benefit of socializing. And I just feel like so many people just, they don't even have time for fun. They don't even have time for friends. And I kind of wonder what the point is.
What's the point of living?
Right. Yeah, no, I agree. So if we were to host a happy gut dinner party where we heed your advice and we build together, we bring together our community and we want to socialize, take us through, like, what does a happy gut like to eat?
Oh my goodness. Whole foods from the earth. And generally, I would say a large majority of people with, let's say, with gut issues, gluten-free. Probably pretty limited in grains, not too high in grains. Lots of vegetables. If you are a meat eater, some meat, but obviously meats from humane sources, organic, grass-fed, hormone-free, free-range poultry or wild fish. And I would say just sticking to ingredients that come from the earth and not too many packaged foods. And not that I'm completely against packaged food, as I do have my guilty pleasures, like Mary's crackers. But really, the important thing is making food from scratch. And just think about the process of it. You know, the whole process of cooking and making something, the anticipation. I don't know about you, but I love to cook.
Yeah, no, I love it.
I love to cook, and I am not generally a recipe cooker, so I'm not going to open a book and look up a recipe. I walk into my kitchen and I just look at what I have, what spices I have, and how I'm feeling. What mood am I in? Am I in a more spicy mood? Am I in a basil mood? Am I in a thyme mood? And that becomes the theme of my dinner creation. And I find that cooking is very relaxing. So cooking puts me into a parasympathetic state. You know, as long as I'm not cooking for like a party of 15, then I think I would be in a sympathetic state. Or if I was on Top Chef or one of those master cooking shows, I think that that is not parasympathetic cooking. But cooking in my kitchen for my small family or friends and not feeling rushed and taking my time and just feeling what I want to make. I mean, to me, that is relaxing. And just think that by the time you eat, when you've done that, you're in a parasympathetic state. You're ready to take in the food, rest and digest. You know, it's perfect.
I love that. Dr. Pedre, how would you define health?
Health is having the energy and the drive and the ability where your body is in harmony with yourself and the environment so you can do the things that you love.
Boom, you nailed it. I love that.
That to me is what health is.
I love it. It's my most favorite question to ask because it's always a little bit different, and I feel like it just gets deeper and more insightful every time I hear it. Each month, I'm featuring a new Anthropology quiz to help you unlock and uncover some of the physical performance blocks that may be holding you back from your true potential. When you know better, you can do better. To learn more or to take the quiz, head on over to meganwalker.com/Anthropology quiz. So I have 5 quick questions for you. And this is the last bit of the interview. And it's what I call my KPIs or key performance indicators. So just like you would have those in a business and an entrepreneur would be looking at these, I believe we also have them in our health and lifestyle. So these are just some really quick questions for you with respect to your KPIs.
Okay.
First one, Do you have a consistent morning routine? And if so, can you share?
I have a morning routine. It is not always consistent from day to day. But one of the really important things that I do in the morning is think about what I'm grateful for and express an intention. It doesn't have to be verbal, like it can be all internal, but express an intention for my day. And obviously it's usually a positive intention. So I'm setting the tone for the day from the moment that I get up.
I love it. Fiction or nonfiction, what are you reading right now?
I am such a nonfiction reader. I'm more of a nonfiction reader and a fiction watcher.
I like that way of putting it.
But right now I am reading One Spirit Medicine, and it's about shamanism and using the shamanic approach in healing and health. And I'm just really fascinated by that right now. So I wanted to dive a little bit deeper into it.
It's so interesting. It's on my nightstand.
That's where it is right now. It's in my nightstand, and I probably get about 10 minutes every night or so.
Yeah, that's the way it works. That's amazing. What is the one thing you are most consistent with respect to your health?
Well, exercise is important, but so is diet for me. And what has really changed in the last year is like really, really getting clear, getting even clearer about how I want to respect my body. So what that means is that if I'm traveling and I find myself in situations where I don't have the right options, I don't use that as an excuse to slip off of my higher goal, which is to remain, to treat my body with respect in terms of what I put into it. So I am still like really consistent with what I will put into my body. And I become more so with that in the last 2 years, because I just find that why not? Why wouldn't I do that if I can feel optimal 98% of the time, let's say? I'm not going to say 100 because we all have our down days. But if I know that the biggest choice I have that influences that is what I eat, why would I stray from eating the right things?
Well put. What do you do for fun or play?
I go to the beach. That is one of my favorite places to disconnect. But the other thing I love to do is hang out with my teenager son now. And sometimes I get him to the basketball court. He can be a little curmudgeon-y lately, a little moody at times. But we have a really good time playing basketball or just being goofy around the house or playing games.
It's great. And my last question for you. Entrepreneurism, are we born this way or do we learn to become entrepreneurs?
I think that anyone can learn to be an entrepreneur, but there is a certain personality with which entrepreneurs are born with, if that makes sense. And it's hard for me to distinguish because my dad was an entrepreneur. So at some point, and I think I was always an out-of-the-box thinker, and a little bit of a, even though I was very conformist as a child, I was like the type of kid that you would have wanted to have as a parent. I was so straight-laced. I did my homework. I got straight A's. And I don't know if I was born with that. I know that I was born with a drive. But I can tell you in my early years as an entrepreneur, I felt like I was tripping over my two left feet. And I had no clue what I was doing. And I'm like, I remember what one person told me, and it was like, what is the difference between the successful businessman or entrepreneur and the unsuccessful one? The successful one shows up. And that's it. It's not that the successful one knows more. It's just that the successful one is just willing to keep going and going and going. Even when they fall down, you get back up, you learn from your mistakes, and you just keep going.
It's great advice. And you meditate.
And I meditate. Yeah.
Show up and meditate. Dr. Pedro, you have so much to share and offer. Where can people find out more about what you're up to? Because I know you have some really cool things in the works right now.
I got something really cool in the works, and I think your audience is going to be really excited about it, because we kind of hinted about it throughout, talking about the importance of nutrition. So I have become involved in a collaborative effort with MindBody Green and several really big name doctors like Dr. Mark Hyman, Dr. Frank Lippmann, in MindBody Green's first ever advanced functional nutrition training program. And this can be a program for both practitioners and even for laypersons. Anyone who wants to dive deeper and learn more about how they can use nutrition, how can they can use food to heal themselves. And we go through all different types of conditions, thyroid disease, autoimmune disease. I talk about the gut, about inflammation, cardiovascular disease. So we look at all these different areas of health and what are the types of diets that can be followed to improve. But it's complete 6-month online training. You do it from your home. You do it at your own pace. It's designed for the busy professional. So it's not like you have to quit your job and go do this. You do it at your own pace, and it's got markers throughout, progress markers. We have quizzes that people do to be able to get onto the next level. And we start with teaching about how to stock your kitchen, what to have, what to not have, the typical elimination diet, things that are really key and central to what you and I do with patients on a daily basis. And like I said in the beginning, I mean, 80% of it, I really think, is diet and lifestyle. And if you can conquer that, just think of what an incredible gift that is. So I know you have a link for it, and you're going to put it.
We'll put it in our show notes. Yeah.
You put it in your show notes for the audience. This is something really incredible. It's a first time opportunity, and you get to have time with me and with Dr. Hyman. We're going to have office hours. It's kicking off. I think the last day to register is October 26th. And it kicks off on November 1st. And I will be having office hours at the beginning of November where people can come from anywhere, all over the world, online and ask their questions.
I love it. What a great concept. We are going to have all the information there. I'm sitting here thinking, I'm like, I want office hours with you and Dr. Mark Hyman. This is amazing. I can't thank you enough for your time this evening. I feel like we could have gone on and on about this stuff forever, but your breadth of knowledge is incredible. And we're also fortunate to have had the chance to listen to you with this interview. Thanks so much for taking the time.
This has been awesome. You know, we talked about medical stuff with the gut and even talk about being an entrepreneur. You know, two amazing things.
That's how we roll here at the Anthropology Podcast. Thank you. I'm sure we will be chatting soon. I really appreciate your time.
Thanks for having me. My pleasure.
If you enjoyed our conversation and would like to hear more, head on over to Stitcher or iTunes and subscribe to the Anthropology Podcast. We would also really appreciate a quick review. When people have their health, they can change the world. Let us keep you healthy and you go change the world.